Well, hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Officially our first brand new episode of 2014 after we had our best of to start off the year to help you guys get caught up with some of our previous episodes. We have a fantastic episode here for you today, though, as we venture into February with Super Bowl in the past and March Madness, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs right around the corner. And we have Peter Robert Casey on the show today, the founder of BB Passport and also director of community for Team Epiphany. You also may remember Peter Robert Casey from when he was a bit of a star early on in his sports career, when he became the first social media reporter with St. John's and later with the New York Knicks basketball teams. So before we get to our interview with Peter Robert Casey, though, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast is Sports Fan Graph. It's a free website started by a sports marketer named Pat Coyle. It's been around for a little while now. You may have seen it in the past few years. But Pat does a great job with it. It looks at sports teams from across pro and amateur sports, as well as some media outlets, and allows you to get a quick snapshot of their social media numbers, in particular their Facebook likes, Facebook talking about metric, as well as the number of Twitter followers. There's even venues on there now as well, so you can look at a Staples Center compared to, say, an American Airlines arena. It's really, really helpful tool to use just to get a quick snapshot of who the biggest risers and gainers are in each sport, because you can also see the relative growth to see who's growing a lot recently, as well as to get a quick idea of who's on top with the highest gross numbers. Good way to track your competition, but also a good way to see who's engaged as well. The ones at the top with the biggest fan followings, the biggest Facebook followings, biggest Twitter followings, may not always be the most engaged fan base, so it's important to look closely at that talking about statistic as well. It's also good to isolate your geographic area as well as your sport area. So if you want to compare your football team with other football teams, or your Dallas area team with all the other Dallas area teams, it can be really helpful to see how you guys are competing with the same audience, as well as to come up with some interesting data that you can present to both your superiors as well as to potential corporate sponsors who want to see what makes your audience different. Finally, and this is an underutilized way to use it, is look at who the biggest gainers are from day to day, and then take a look at their pages on their Facebook, on their Twitter, and see what are they doing to drive that relative growth. It's a great way to get some really good ideas a lot of times, and you can see what innovative ideas are being used out there to spur growth and to jumpstart engagement. So definitely take a look today. I guarantee you'll at least have a few minutes of fun playing around with it. Look at Sports Fan Graph at sportsfangraph.com. Thanks, as always, to Pat Coyle for maintaining that website and doing a great job doing so. And I think you'll definitely find some use with sportsfangraph.com. So that's this episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast with our interview today with Peter Robert Casey. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Sports Fan Graph. Been around for a while, a great tool to really track what sports teams are doing across social media and, you know, compare who's growing, who's not, who's the biggest risers and gainers, and also who's at the top and who has some work to do. It kind of is a perfect segue into our interview today, as we're delighted to have Peter Robert Casey, founder of BB Passport and also director of community for Team Epiphany. And he's going to talk to us today about BB Passport as well as some of the work he does with Team Epiphany. And I'm looking forward to talking to him. And thanks so much for being on the podcast, Peter.
Neil, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Peter, we're looking forward to learning from you today. I know you have your hands all over a lot of different things, especially basketball when it comes to looking at venues across the country, really. But before we get into the meat of the interview, I always like to, you know, have our listeners get to know our guests a little bit, how they came into where they are today. Everyone wants to really work in sports. So tell us, what your career path was, how you got into what you're doing now, and any advice or tips you have for people that want to emulate what you did.
Sure. So just, yeah, the real Twitter version of my background is, I graduated from undergraduate school in 2004. I spent 5 years in the brick and mortar community building side at Columbia University. Basically, with the graduate students' education, we would do all sorts of programming to build community on campus, make them feel part of something larger than just their academic curriculum. So I had a little bit of a background in that field, and then I wanted to transition into sports. And with the way the web was going, this object and this idea of community on the web was really growing quickly. So kind of was learning the tools as they were being developed and built. And I used to blog about this on my own website on how the sports sphere, particularly in basketball, can use these tools to build community, connect with fans, and leverage these tools for both business purposes, but also to really engage and build relationships with fans. So anyway,
So
St.
Peter,
Sure.
just to give us some context, was this like the pre-Facebook era, post-Facebook? Was AOL big then, or what kind of era are we looking at?
This is the early Facebook era. Kind of MySpace was kind of falling apart at this point, and very early days of Facebook, and Blogger was still out there, so it was
Okay.
post Blogger, and that was the platform I kind of went with in the early stages.
Okay.
And St. John's University discovered my blog. The SID over there was a reader, and I didn't know that until he reached out and said, "Hey, I have this concept. I love the way you cover social media and how it intersects with basketball. Would you be interested in covering our team?" And not being a journalist, it was something I was a little bit hesitant to do, but I figured, you know what, this would be a great way to both learn on the fly, both my journalistic chops, but also expand my knowledge of the platforms and how it could be a cool way for fans to get behind the curtain and see how, a team's journey throughout a season. And little did I know at the time, that became a national story that I got a media credential to cover a basketball team, Division One team, on my personal Twitter account. And it got in everything from the New York Times to New York Magazine. Mashable covered this, and the New York Knicks were paying attention. And someone from the marketing department reached out and asked if I would be willing to speak at their first ever tweet up. And this is February of 2010 now.
Wow.
So of course, I obliged. It was a great opportunity to sit alongside on a panel with Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter. And 6 months after that conversation, the Knicks came calling again, this time with a full-time job, becoming their editor-in-chief of KnicksNow.com and also their first ever social media specialist. So kind of getting out there, doing these opportunities with both St. John's and speaking at the tweet up led to my first full-time gig in the space. And ever since then, I've worked with Five Star Basketball, and now I'm at Team Epiphany working on a couple of sports apparel accounts.
Oh, that's fascinating. Some really, really great insight there in that you just kind of stepped into it because you were active and you were blogging about it, you were learning about it, and people took notice. And I think that's a great piece of advice to anyone that wants to really get their foot in the door is if you have ideas, if you have interests, pursue them. Don't just sit around and start a blog or participate in a Twitter chat or research a little bit. And that's really cool to hear about that. And I certainly remember when you were a big story of a youngster coming up and being hired to cover a team through a social media atmosphere.
That's, yeah, it happened really fast, and I was fortunate for that. But like you said, I watched actually a video. It was a keynote presentation from Gary Vaynerchuk, who probably a lot of people know that work in and around social media. It was at his 2008 Blog World presentation, and he came out on stage and he said this one thing that stuck with me till this day. He says a lot of people go home and complain about their job, they don't like their day job, but at night they end up sitting in front of the television watching whatever it is, Lost or Mad Men, and not really doing anything about fixing their daytime situation. He goes, "So many people can crush it between 7 p.m. and 2 a.m. If you want it bad enough, you can do it." And the light bulb went off, and I said, "He's absolutely right. I have the energy at night to do this." This is before I met, my wife. And it really starts with really taking action and getting a focus of something that you want to do, whether it's a blog or a podcast or going out and speaking or whatever it may be. You have to actually take action to make your dreams happen.
Ah, that's a great story, inspiring. And just to give some listeners some context right now, Peter is talking to me after his wife has gone to sleep, and it is late at night there out on the East Coast. So he's definitely practicing what he preaches. Peter, tell me when you did first get involved with St. John's and the Knicks, what do you think it was that you were doing differently? How were your ideas different than what a beat writer was doing, or what they were doing previously? What do you think it was that got them to think, we should talk to this Peter Robert Casey kid, because he has some good ideas that we haven't heard before?
So yeah, so actually that year, that was the 2009-2010 season, and St. John's has a decent sized beat, I guess cadre of beat writers, I would call them. It was about five of them, from Newsday, Daily News, The Post, and occasionally the Times would come. At the time, though, they were not using Twitter to cover the team. So basically, all the updates that fans were getting at home, especially if it was not a nationally televised game, was the post-game write-up. So there was an advantage of being real-time and showing fans what the camera wasn't showing them if it was on TV or if they were streaming the game on the web. I was able to give them those quotes immediately after the game at the post-game press conference, rather than waiting till it gets published on a story and filtered by an editor. So it was just the velocity of news and information I was able to deliver in real time. And slowly, as the season went on, they started picking up the tools. So it was great that it rubbed off. Initially, there was a hesitation and a kind of a reluctance for them to use it, and then they saw that the fans were kind of demanding it. That's the world we live in now, is everything is instant and now, hence the word Knicks Now, we talked about that. That's just the way fans went. So in the beginning, the advantage was just a knowledge and ability to use the tools. And then it was really just being able to storytell in micro form. You have 140 characters. How can you tell a story in that short of a space? So those were the two things. It was just like early adoption and the ability to storytell with a very limited amount of characters.
That's fascinating. And to hear it now, it sounds almost like child's play or common sense.
That's right.
Oh, what are you talking about? But at the time, such a new idea. Did you face a lot of – was there almost resentment almost from traditional writers who saw you uprooting the status quo, and all of a sudden they couldn't just sit back and eat a hot dog in the press box? They had to be thinking about producing content in real time?
There wasn't actually, it was funny because I still recall going on the road a bit and into other arenas when I covered St. John's, and there was people just scratching their head like, what outlet is this guy coming from, right? And they were like, I don't get it. And then sometimes, a lot of them though, they weren't rude about it. They actually were more inquisitive. They were like, and asking questions like, well, what is it, and what can I do with this, and how can it help me? And when you put it that way and says, from the basic ability to outpost your story or get immediate feedback on it, then they saw the value in it. Like when you put it in their terms and how they're going to use it for their job, it starts to make sense. And as long as you frame it that way, they were very receptive, and obviously a lot of them started using it. And then it became, you can't ignore it, right? It was all, at that time in 2009, it was all over the news. I mean, just the very beginnings on teams using it and leagues and athletes. At that point, you had no other choice, honestly.
Excellent. And early on, too, was it just the Knicks and or the Red Storm thinking, we want to be ahead of the game, we want to be pioneering new things? And what were they looking at with you in terms of, this is helping us accomplish business objectives, this is helping us produce extra value for our program? Or was it just, let's try something new and see what we can do with it after we get the fans engaged and involved?
For St. John's, their agenda, I think, was they were heading into what was on paper going to be probably a mediocre season. And they kind of needed a story to sell through, to build some excitement around the program and show that they embrace technology, that they're one of the schools that's not going to shut down players from using the tools, but they were actually going to embrace it and ride the wave. So I think that was their motive behind contacting me and coming up with this idea. For the Knicks at the time were also going through a restructuring, and they brought in some digital folks from the outside. And so for them, it was a no-brainer. It was just like, this is the way media is going. And let's go all in on it. And so they wanted someone who knew the nuances of the sport and who also knew the platforms, best practices on those platforms, and who could write. So you had, they had a specific skill set in mind. And having spoken at their tweet up mostly about the St. John's experience, they said, hey, would you be interested? So I was in the right place at the right time for the Knicks, but that was kind of where they were going.
Do you think initially you were more trying to serve the fans who were actively viewing the game, whether on TV or in person, or was it more giving fans information that otherwise wouldn't have seen anything until SportsCenter later that night or until seeing the New York Times the next day?
So for St. John's at the time, a lot of those games were not televised and not streamed. So for them, it was giving them information. A lot of them even wanted like basic score updates, or if someone went down with an injury, what was the latest update from the SID? Was it a sprain or a fracture or something more serious? For the Knicks, who were in the national spotlight, for them, it was really about recognizing and engaging one-to-one with these fans. Like, how do we build? You got to understand, like, too, and this is 2010-11 season with the Knicks. They were coming off a 10-year period where they were kind of irrelevant as a team. They didn't make the playoffs. Their decisions on and off the court kind of pushed their loyal fans away. And so at the time, they called them lapsed loyalists. How do we re-engage those fans? Well, let's do it by connecting with them, like showing them that we actually care. One, we're going to show you, like, what life's like as a player at practice. We're going to embed a journalist in our team, who was me. But also, we're going to answer your questions. We're going to listen to your feedback and show you that we actually do care. So they had two different, you know, it was a little bit different for each of those experiences, but they really made sense from a business standpoint.
Very interesting. And certainly seems like there was, at some point, a light bulb moment, whether it was with an ex-executive or whatnot, when they realized this social media thing might have some juice to it, and that this fan engagement piece is our ticket to winning back some fans.
That's exactly right. They said, hey, this is where fans are now talking about us and talking about the Garden itself, anything from the music being played to the comfort of the chairs to the concessions to the food to the purchasing of ticket experience. We need to listen to what the conversation is actually, what's being said about us as a club, as a franchise, and feed that back into the organization through all the various stakeholders. That was one. And then two, it was like, for the outbound standpoint, it was, what kind of stories can we tell? What kind of access can we share that the media might not even have? Because that's the advantage that you do have as a team. I mean, you have the most access of anyone. I mean, you're in charge, essentially, of granting that access to journalists. So why not share that and give that advantage to those fans who spend money with your team, who watch you night in and night out? So it makes a lot of sense. And they were really quick because they at the time, like I said, they were restructuring. They were bringing in folks who had background in that area. And they went all in on it.
Oh, what a great insight. And I think that even goes, even these days, teams don't realize that the little things that they have access to on a daily basis are things that fans will eat up and just crave constantly. And this is just, it's all owned media that teams can start using themselves, and you're seeing more and more teams start to do that.
That's exactly it. And like you said earlier, it really comes down to, it's like a lot of times it's common sense. It's just that the technology has changed and how we connect with them. I mean, it's like if someone's really spending a season ticket holder year after year after year, it might be nice to recognize them, right? I mean, that's common sense, but there's so many cool ways now that you can do it and raise it up a level that teams just need to concentrate on it and obviously strategize around it.
So did you see yourself with the Knicks and the Red Storm? Just were you helping lead the way, or was there a certain point in your time with them when a lot of other teams started jumping on board with this whole social media fan engagement piece, and then all of a sudden things started evolving very rapidly and continues to do so today?
Yeah, it all happened rapidly. I mean, when I was with the Knicks, I mean, other organizations like the Suns, the Lakers, the Celtics, even the smaller clubs like the Kings and the Timberwolves, I mean, those were like, I think at the time, the teams that really got it quickly and started adapting, whether it was moving resources internally or hiring folks outside who had an expertise in digital, social, and who could write. So it really did happen quickly. I don't think it was because of the Knicks. There wasn't anything necessarily that we did, except, you know, Knicks Now, the site. I mean, I would say the first one was Planet Orange, was a platform that the Suns launched. But the difference was the Knicks are actually now hiring a dedicated writer and social media person to run it. I think that was something that they pioneered. And other teams started doing the same. I mean, the Bulls hired a gentleman named Sam Smith, who was a newspaper guy for 25 years, and brought him in-house to do a lot of storytelling and feature stories on the website. So it all happened fast. I mean, and a lot of times they even looked outside of sports for those best practices. I don't always think that sports leads the way. A lot of times I feel like sports follows from outside of their vertical. So that's what I think, at least.
Oh, very true. I mean, you're seeing communities start to form all around with brands, and anytime there's something that people can connect on with a mutual interest, mutual love, mutual passion, there's a potential for community there, and I think that's a great insight.
You're not lying.
So tell me about how BB Passport came to be, and what you did when you left the Knicks, and you know how that evolved with BB Passport.
Yeah, so they're kind of interrelated, but mostly exclusive from one another. When I left the Knicks, I ended up joining Five Star Basketball, which traditionally was a camp for 45 years, and then they wanted to expand into digital media and really get after grassroots and high school basketball, covering that at the elite level. And I did that for a couple of years and then got this opportunity with Team Epiphany. But for Basketball Passport, it was really something, a very minor problem that I was trying to solve as a fan myself. So I'm a basketball junkie, and there's nothing that I actually love more than experience and going to new arenas to see the game. I mean, it's just something I've always loved, is mixing travel with the game of basketball. And so for years I had this arena bucket list just sitting in my head, right? And one day I decided, if I don't write this thing down, I'm not going to act upon it and commit to it. So I took this list of arenas that I wanted to see, mostly were college arenas actually. I put them in a Google document. And as I went and got to see a game at, for example, Gallagher-Iber Arena, it's your beloved Oklahoma State team, I would just put a strike through in the bucket list on my Google Doc. And I realized this is a very static and self-serving way of keeping track of a bucket list. And I said, it have to be an easier way to digitize this and track it over time. And that's when I actually reached out to a programmer to say, hey, I have this idea. Is this something we can build? And the guy's name is Kyle Welliston. He's a really talented database engineer and programmer based in Chicago. And he said, yeah, absolutely. So during that time, I actually started interviewing fans, kind of just picking their brains, people like myself who love to get out to games more than anything. And they told me one thing. They said, yes, I have a bucket list, and yes, I do track it in my head, at least at the minimum. But I'm also interested in tracking where I've been in the past, games I've been to. I have boxes of ticket stubs sitting under my bed, games I've been into in the past. It'd be great to merge those two things together.
Like a digital scrapbook, so to speak.
It's like a digital scrapbook that encompasses your entire game-going journey as a fan. So you can see where I've been and where I want to go. And that was the idea. And it was like two emotions that we're trying to strike. One is nostalgia and reminiscing of those past games, being able to relive those positive memories, whether you went to the game with your father or a girlfriend or your son even. And then it's also building anticipation for the future. So that's kind of where the idea was spawned from. And we launched it October 30th. We're actually in the process now of building out the baseball product, same concept. And hopefully we'll knock out all four North American sports by the end of 2014.
So give our listeners a quick run through of what BB Passport is, how someone joins it, how they stay active with it even when they're not actively attending a game, so to speak, and you know why people continue to go back to the website and continue to spend time on it.
So yeah, so from the fan journey and the user journey, when you go to the site and it takes only a minute to create an account, the first thing we see, the most natural behavior most people do, is kind of log all their old ticket stubs to get caught up, if you will. And And the beauty of that is once you log the games you've been to in the past, the site dishes out some fun personal stats. The number of games you've attended, the arenas you've seen, what the best performances you witnessed were, and even what those teams' records are for the games that you personally were at. So you could see if the data says if you're good luck or bad luck. You know, a lot of people joke about that. I'm not going to another Knicks game. They always lose when I go. Well, now you can actually get that information. And so it's fun that it unlocks this experience that you can both relive the game, but also get stats that relate to your own experience. So that's mostly what people do when they first get there. The other thing is the like I said before, you can create your bucket list. You can actually find games near you any night of the week, see how far they are from you, get directions to that game. And then you could take arena challenges. We really wanted to make the platform competitive because sports fans, just like athletes themselves, have that competitive nature generally. So we called it Passport for a reason. When you get out to venues and you hit certain achievements or you conquer a challenge, you get a digital stamp for your passport. So it's a way to validate and incentivize this behavior and also compete with other fans just like you.
So it's relatively analogous with say, Foursquare badges to some degree?
Exactly. Same concept as Foursquare badges, but uniquely tied to the game of basketball. So, for example, if you visit 25 games in a season or 100 games in your career, or if you've seen every Atlantic Division NBA venue or every Big East college basketball venue, you get a stamp for your passport, things of that nature.
And what was it about basketball early on, besides your own passion for it, that made you think, let's build out all the basketball stuff first, and then maybe on the line we'll look into baseball, to football, to other sports as well?
Yeah, so if you started with a blank slate, you probably would start with baseball first. Anyone mostly would go that route because of travel is kind of embedded in the culture of the game. It's a summer sport. There are more games. Families plan vacations around baseball, seeing the stadiums. But for me, like you said, my background, my knowledge, my relationships were all in basketball. And Kyle's were too. Kyle being the developer, he for 10 years ran a site called Basketball State, which is a college basketball statistics site. So we kind of started with what we knew. And then, you know, it was real quick. As soon as you start engaging fans and getting them to use the site, they say, hey, you going to roll this thing out for baseball? Or even, like, you know, football fans were asking the same thing. And we wanted to do it in progression. And then we're going to tie them all together with the native mobile app because, honestly, that's where fans are really consuming it. And it makes the most sense. If I'm at a game, I can simply check in and add that game forever to my passport, add my photos and memories, and tie them right there in the moment.
Very true. And what kind of content did you see fans uploading early on, and has it evolved over time? I mean, did it start out as almost mini blog entries, and now it's more photo or video based? Or I mean, how did it start, and how has it evolved?
The first thing people do generally is the first interaction is just the logging of games, and then beyond that, it's really sharing their photos of that game so that it's tied to that specific experience. So now you have the box score there. If I go to a specific game, Oklahoma State, let's say, versus Texas, and I can add my photo back from 1991 if I still have it. And then you see some people commenting on the experience. If they feel inclined to publicly share it, they'll comment on that specific game, something that stood out or experience surrounding the game. Maybe it was like, oh, I got stuck in traffic, or that was the game where it was a snowstorm and leaving the arena was a disaster. Anything like that. People are starting to share. And the beautiful thing is that I've noticed, the one behavior that we really didn't anticipate, but it's beautiful to see, is like, since we built it, these junkie fans like myself, when you start looking at your stats, you start feeling compelled to go to more games. You're like, I haven't been to a game in a week. And you start going to games you normally wouldn't even go to or think about. Only because, like I said, it becomes competitive. And you want to see new venues. So that's something, you know, we hoped for, but we really didn't anticipate happening. And we're starting to see that, which is great.
The power of gamification. It's a newer word, but a very strong term throughout sports marketing.
That's right. I mean, sure, in the long run, the stamps are not going to drive someone to go crazy, but if you put your name in a leaderboard and you see someone else who's going to a lot of games, there's kind of an envy there. When you see someone's photos from Allen Fieldhouse or, and the next day they're going to a Kansas State game, you know, you're like, you get a little envious as a fan. You're like, hey, I want to do that too.
It's certainly interesting to think about that you were one of many, apparently, that has this drive and this love of visiting different venues, of seeing different venues, and really almost having an emotional tie to these places. I mean, what do you think it is about the experience of going to a live event, of being in the venue itself, that really resonates with people, and why they want to remember things and have a bucket list of venues to visit?
There's probably a couple things at play. One is being the open road, this concept of this travel that's kind of, I feel like, innate to all of us. And I think tying that with something even deeper or more attachment that people have, like an affinity for a team or a sport, and tying those two things together. For college basketball particularly, I'll say this, is like a lot of these arenas have a personality or an identity. I mean, Allen Fieldhouse, and they have a history and the chants. So when you go there, like, and you've seen it on TV, if you ever watch a Kansas game and they're doing the Rock Chalk Jayhawk chant, and then you couple that with, for example, James Naismith, the game's founder, having went and taught there and being the first basketball coach, the 13 rules are there. His grave is there. So now you have all this history surrounding the game there. You, as a fan, I want to go see that. I mean, not only, you know, most people don't put on their list, if you're not a sports fan, I want to go to Kansas, right? It's not a hot spot. Mm-hmm. But if you're a sports fan and you appreciate the history of the game and you appreciate a fan base that loves it just as much as you do, and it creates this amazing atmosphere to just, you have to experience it rather than just watching it on TV, you start making plans to get out there. And like you said, there's a lot of us that really do enjoy that and appreciate it and make plans to do it. And I think that's the same for baseball, and we'll see that once we launch that product in April.
And do you think can that also manifest itself in the fans that do attend more frequently, or do they tend to take it for granted over time? Like, I mean, you talk about that pull, that allure of the history, of the traditions, and seeing in person, you know, feeling the benches rumble as the Rock Chalk Jayhawk chant goes on. Is there that, okay, I've seen it, now I'm over it, or does it still have that allure to it, and that's why fans that even do live, you know, close to Allen Fieldhouse or close to Hinkle Fieldhouse continue to go to games day in and day out, because that history just keeps pulling them back in?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of that. So you have folks who are travelers that get out and want to see all different arenas. Then you have fans that are just pure Kansas fans and will do anything to see their team. And there's probably a lot more of them than the travelers. So it's really a mix of both, and they're both competitive. They both want to get out. Some folks want to see the most arenas. Others just want to be the most loyal Kansas fan. I've been to the most Kansas games overall. So you have a couple of different motivators at play. Mm-hmm. For me, I actually like experiencing new arenas. I've never been like one of those fans that just ride or die with one team. I just really love the game, and I love it at all levels. And so I like to get out to a lot of different games and events across high school, college, and pro. So I feel like I'm in that smaller minority that does that. Most fans, I think, you know, live and die with their team. They become season ticket holders for that team. Not so much for, you know, there's a lot of venues that don't have the cachet and the experience like an Allen Fieldhouse, but that's okay. I love my team and I want to see them play, and they excite me, and every season's a new journey for me. So it's a couple different motivators, but that same type of thing, that fan is someone that we want to connect with.
Are you almost, as someone who really does appreciate the venues for themselves, is there a little bit of not ill will, but just a disappointment to see some of these newer venues spring up, more to these postmodern, your KFC Yum Centers and whatnot? I mean, it seems like that the history is going away a little bit more at the expense of trying to win the arms race and trying to win the best recruits by impressing them with these huge postmodern facilities.
Yeah, you hit it on the head, man. I really love traditional old school venues personally. I mean, you went to Yale as an undergrad. There's nothing I loved better last year when I went to Yale game, seeing those wooden chair backs, real old school, like auditorium style chair backs. I'll take that any day over some plush, comfy, you know, reclinable chair. But again, schools are not trying to woo me to go play there. So their motives are completely different. They're trying to lure the best talent to their school. And you do that, you know, not with the wooden chair back. You do that with the best facility possible. But as a fan, and I'm a little bit older than the player in a different generation, I appreciate the history of the game. And I love those buildings that, like the Palestra, for example, that just have a rich history and so many pros and great college and even high school players like Wilt and Kobe have played in that building. So that's something as a fan that I can truly appreciate. But if I'm, you know, the coach of UPenn, at some point I'm like, hey, we got to update this, man. These young kids, they don't yet appreciate this, you know, when they're 17, 18. It's different. It's different.
Are you seeing, is the best practice sort of a hybrid, is trying to maintain that sense of history while also bringing in the more modern stuff? And are you starting to see that more trending across the venues that show up on BB Passport and some of the notes that people put on there?
And a good example is when I was in Indiana this past weekend, I talked to one of the associate athletic directors of Butler, and we're talking about Hinkle because they're going through a big renovation now. And it's like, how do we keep the integrity of this place? You know, it was built in 1927. It's hosted high school state championships, amazing college games. How do we keep this, update it in a way that doesn't ruin and spoil the history, but that also makes it a little bit more efficient? And one example is, Neil, is they, since they don't have a video board of any sort, their concourse around the like perimeter of the concourse, it kind of looks like a minor league baseball outfield with all these poster ads. And you know, they want to clean that up a bit and just have four video boards in the corner, not disrupt the concourse and disrupt the views, but do it in a way that looks a little bit better and is more efficient. So yeah, it's a mix of hitting on both of those things. The Yum Center, for example, not a big fan of that, going completely from scratch. Even Matthew Knight Arena at Oregon, as beautiful as it is, I hear MacArthur Court, the old facility, had that history and, you know, fans are on top of each other. I don't know. I pretend to love that more than these new modern facilities.
Oh, certainly. What kind of things are you seeing on the BB Passport website? Are there things that are jumping out at you a little more, the things that scream almost novelty, or things that are trying to lure fans back out there, like, oh, their Wi-Fi here was really good, or this place has some really interesting second screen content, or, you know, offers live video streaming or whatnot, or... What kind of new things are you seeing pop up on BB Passport that makes you think, oh, venues are evolving pretty quickly?
So yeah, the Wi-Fi is being one of them. Just the simple fact of being able to take a photo and share and get web access in an arena, it seems to be rare these days. I mean, a lot of venues have not figured it out, just with the volume of traffic and people trying, when there's a dead ball situation or timeout, get on the web. That's one thing. You see people talk about that, the ability to access the web for any reason, whether it's for social media or just to search for something. The one thing I've been seeing, and Passporters are talking about, is the arenas themselves making it a more engaging experience, like, and tying in technology, like being able to find where the closest bathroom is through an app or some way. I think people are starting to appreciate those little things that say, hey, we care, we hear you. How can we make your experience better? So some Basketball Passport users are talking about that. But I think most Passporters do enjoy the traditional. Right now, I'd say the average age is a little bit older for Passport users. They do enjoy those old school venues and aren't big on amenities. They just want the true, pure experience.
And does it seem like those ones that maintain that tradition, do those tend to also pop up more on BB Passport as places that people really do value the experience more, as opposed to people being overly impressed by these new school amenities? Or is there a combination? Are some people really impressed with wow, this place had a ton of new technology?
It's really, so like if you look at the most bucket listed venues on the site, they're actually those, I would call them the college classics: Cameron Indoor, Allen Fieldhouse, Hinkle, Palestra, Assembly Hall, Pauley. So that tells me that the user base still appreciates those places that have an identity, that have almost a persona, if you will, and where the fan base is just rabid and the tickets are hard to come by. Versus, and then there's also what I love seeing is, because the way the user base is spread out throughout the country, is finding out about these arenas that you may not have on your radar, these low to mid-major schools that you're not even thinking about. For example, North Carolina A&T, the Dog Pound, right? Like, nobody really has it on their bucket list, but I get emails from people like, you should feature this site. I mean, for this arena, it's amazing. And then they'll send a YouTube video to show me why, for example, and they have these crazy chants when someone gets fouled out, and I'm like, wow, I have to get there. And
that's so cool.
So people might not know about those smaller venues, but I think that's one thing that's cool about Passport is you find out about it. And you do that because it's kind of crowdsourcing the information based on their personal experience going there.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, sharing all the stories that go with these venues. That's awesome.
Yeah, these venues have, a lot of them have a rich history, and the ones that don't have something else that is worth talking about.
So tell me then, looking forward a little bit, almost to the future, so to speak, is there going to be an imminent conflict between teams and schools having to sort of decide, okay, let's go all in and make sure that we cater to our core fan base and keep the tradition and keep the history? Or are they some teams and schools starting to give up on that and saying, we need to be selling to corporate people. We need to be selling the luxury seats. We need to be, getting more revenue per ticket at the expense of your fans who have been going to the game for 20 years plus.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, money talks, and whatever is going to obviously get people in seats and help bridge relationships with corporate partners, I think that's what's going to dictate what they decide to do. A lot of that time, that informs decisions. But I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think a lot of fans can appreciate, for example, the Garden is a great example, right? Here's a historic building, and what they did and the way they renovated the Garden, keeping intact, for example, the iconic ceiling in the Garden, the sight lines, even improving the sight lines, and doing it in a way like the amenities. There are certain things about the old Garden that everyone agreed, like the concourse was so narrow that when there's a bathroom line, you can't even get past the bathroom line because it wraps around the concourse, blocking traffic, makes it a mess. But you keep the things that people really care about, like the look and feel, the experience, and keeping that intact. So there's a way to do it and win doing both. So
this is so, it's such a relevant topic of conversation now with Wrigley Field having its issues, and Yankee Stadium recently opening up the new Yankee Stadium, and it's something that's happening throughout professional sports and college sports, and it's really interesting to hear your very informed perspective about trying to keep that brand and that affinity that has been so strong so long, while also becoming more modern and solving those little issues that we should be over by this time, this day and age.
And you're never going to make everybody happy, right? So that's the whole thing. It's generally a business decision. You have to make a sound business decision. You're not going to make everybody happy. Some people always want new. Some people rather the old. And you have to figure out what's best for the brand and what's best for the organization and for the business. I mean, whether you build a brand new facility and you turn off some of the old school folks, if they really love the team, I think that speaks louder than the actual venue, and they'll keep coming back.
Oh man, you are a wealth of knowledge, sir. We could talk to you all day about this stuff. But before we get to this episode's shareable stat, just give our listeners an idea of what is your ultimate vision for BB Passport. And you mentioned a mobile piece. You mentioned expanding to other sports. And where do you hope to take BB Passport in the short term and the long term?
So in the short term, in 2014, this year, we set out three major goals, and that's to launch next Hardball Passport, which will include Major League Baseball, College Baseball, and also Minor League Baseball. So We're going same comprehensive look and feel of basketball. And we're going to launch beta March 1st and then the public version on April 1st. So that's our first goal. We're going to do the same thing for football in August. And then before the end of the year, we're going to launch our hockey product. So all four sites will be, you know, desktop on top of the web experiences, also with a mobile site. And then 2015 is really building that native mobile app for iOS first.
Very cool. And I imagine the sky's the limit when it comes to, you know, going international and people wanting to visit, you know, stadiums in the UK with football / soccer, as well as, you know, in Spain, Europe, Eastern Europe, Russia. I mean, the sky's the limit, I think. It's awesome.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Soccer presents a huge opportunity, and at the same time, it presents a lot of challenges with language and whatnot, but it's an exciting prospect and one that we would love to tackle. We're going to hit the North American sports first. Soccer will probably, if not most definitely, be that fifth sport just because of the global appeal of it and the different levels. So I think it's, and it's a beautiful thing. And you want to talk about a traveling fan base culture? Soccer really does it really well.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to see the beta version March 1st of the newer stuff, and it's definitely going to be something to watch for. But we're going to hear some good stuff from Peter. We're going to have him back for our fast break here in just a moment. But first, let's get to this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with more from Peter Robert Casey of BB Passport and Team Epiphany. Well, just so much fun and so informative talking to Peter Robert Casey. He is just full of knowledge of basketball venues across the country and really offers some great insight into where that value is of each venue, what's driving fans to want to be there for an event, which in this day and age is increasingly important as the couch gets more and more attractive and live attendance gets to be more and more of either an expense or even a burden sometimes. So really interesting stuff, and we'll be right back with Peter Robert Casey for our fast break questions, and we'll hear some fun stuff from him about some of his favorite venues, some stories he has, and I'll be right back with that. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat has to do with social media hubs, and this one in particular is looking at a football league in the UK, football meaning soccer in this case, and how their use of a social media hub called Scribble Live really showed results for them. Previously, the dwell time on their website, the time per visitor spent, was 1 minute and 20 seconds. Once they put in Scribble Live, that increased to 3 minutes and 42 seconds. That's a 178% increase in time spent. That amount of engagement is staggering. And the social media hubs are really a big topic these days as everyone tries to get it right. You saw it with the Super Bowl, with the Olympics, with golf events, with tennis events, with even just individual teams game to game in the NHL and the NBA and the like. And no one's really seemed to hit it really well yet. Some are trying to incorporate sponsors, some aren't. Some are trying to make images really heavy, some are more text heavy, some are more Twitter versus Instagram versus overall social media statistics. There's a lot of different ideas out there, but no one seems to be able to nail it. But this shareable stat this week shows that if you do nail it and there is quality content there and you're giving fans a reason to go there beyond just aggregating content for them, that fans will stick around, and at that point, then you can incorporate some clever marketing or sponsorship activations. So what can you do? There's a lot of freemium resources out there, a lot of free resources out there that you can try out and see if you can find something that works for your fans. But experiment. Look at what some outside resources have to offer, some agencies, if you don't have the in-house resources yourself. Have a clear strategy with it. Don't just say we're going to throw together all these social media outlets and some hashtags and then let fans just see it all pop up in their face. There has to be some strategy behind it. What is the value that you're bringing to the fans, and what is the value for the organization of driving fans there and hoping and driving them to stay there for long periods of time? Finally, don't hide it. Some teams are a little bit uneasy about putting it out there. They'll tweet a link, sometimes they'll post a link on Facebook, but use your traditional outlets, use your channels. If you have a social media hub that you feel is strong and is offering true value and truly good content, put it out there in all your channels. Throw it on your website homepage. Use a splash page. Throw it in an email newsletter. Let your fans know that this is out there and this is good for them and that they will enjoy it. Give them a reason to try it, and if it's good, if it's quality content, they'll come back. As you saw with this week's charitable stat, that the Football League obviously had a strong product using Scribble Live, which is an interesting product, and got that 178% increase. So that's this episode's charitable stat. If you build it and it's quality, perhaps they will come. All right, we'll be right back with our fast break with Peter Robert Casey on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. Definitely something to open your eyes a little bit. You've been seeing a growth of social media hubs for a while now. People still trying to figure out whether they have value, whether people will actually spend time there. And apparently people will spend time if there's quality content and there's a reason to stick around. And Peter, have you seen any social media hubs recently that have caught your attention? And do you think there's a future in those at all?
I think so. I mean, there's a site that I'm addicted to now, For the Win, and it's just like a short version storytelling around sports, and it's a mix of vines, a mix of short form storytelling that's just really addictive content that goes viral really quickly. I think those kind of sites have a lot of long legs. With the way attention spans are continuing to wane, if you can hit on different types of content that capture your attention really quickly, and in real time, like social media, the sites like For the Win are here to stay.
Ah, very true. And people want to be overstimulated. And For the Win, which I believe is USA Today's project, they do a great job there.
Definitely.
But we're going to have some fun now. We're here with Peter Robert Casey of BB Passport, as well as Director of Community for Team Epiphany. And it's time for his fast break. We're going to have some quick-hitting questions, getting to know Peter and hearing some of Peter Robert Casey's fun stories. So are you ready for your fast break questions, Peter?
Let's do it.
All right. Number one, and you might be biased here, but the live sport that is most amenable to social media and or second screen use, and why?
Great question. Biased here, but I'm going with basketball just due to the fast-paced nature of the game, the way it goes in spurts. I mean, teams go on these runs really quickly, as we saw tonight. Actually, Oklahoma City was down 22-4, and they ended up blowing out the Heat to win it. And there's so many characters in the NBA that you have so many different story options to tell.
Oh, definitely. Games just change in a moment. And heck, I almost want to retweet what you just said, because that's really interesting to me that the game turned around that quickly.
I mean, yeah, you have the competitive nature of that game, and then you also have the soap opera laid on top of it. It's a great sport for a second screen and social.
Oh, love it. All right, number two, and this is one might be tough for you, but I'm looking forward to your answer. The most underrated venue in sports, and why? Underrated.
Whew. Underrated venue, and why? Now, again, I haven't been to a lot of baseball stadiums, so I was going to stick to basketball here. But one that I truly loved, and we mentioned this earlier, was Yale. I mean, not a lot of people travel to New Haven to catch a Yale game, but if you want to see a real old school venue, it's one of the top five oldest gyms in the country, I would go to Yale. And if not Yale, go to the Bronx to Fordham, which is the oldest on-campus venue in the country. Again, they don't have a great team. They're not fielding a great team this season. But if you like old school venues for a cheap ticket, those are two that I would pick.
Oh, very nice. And you know what? People who say there's no love for college basketball up in the Northeast, they got to take a ride to St. John's, go check out John Jay Lee Amphitheater at Yale, and you'll see some incredible history there and really feel like you're part of something special. That's awesome.
Yep.
All right, this is a fun one. And you spoke to this earlier a little bit with your Gary Vaynerchuk experience, and maybe you harken back to here, but the best piece of advice you've personally given and the best piece of advice you've received?
Best piece of advice I've been given, and it wasn't personally handed to me, something I had read was Seth Godin is, you don't need permission, pick yourself. I mean, people sit there always waiting for an opportunity, waiting for someone to knock on their door. Do something. If you love something and you want to create something, do it. I mean, there's no excuses anymore with the technology that's available to us. And like I said, you have time. We talked about this. You have time at night. Especially if you really, really want something, you can find the time and cut out other things. That's the best piece of advice I've received. Best piece of advice I've given, huh? I don't know if I have many pearls of wisdom that I've dropped on people, but I mean, I would say this, and this has also been given to me, and I'm just sharing it and paying it forward, is there really is no substitute for experience. You know, yes, people hire based on relationships, but at the end of the day, what you bring to the table and what you can do is what counts. So if you want experience, go earn it and go do it. Again, you don't need permission to do something anymore. You can do it, and that's how you get your experience. Everyone's like, oh, I don't have it, and I'm waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder to say, come do this. But like if you look at my example, I started blogging about the intersection of basketball and social. Next thing you know, that's where the opportunities were coming.
Oh, well, that's inspiring. I mean, to think that there's so many people out there who, like you said, will spend time watching their favorite TV show at night instead of pursuing their dreams and getting the experience they need to make those dreams a reality. Very inspiring, and I hope all our listeners take that to heart. All right.
Absolutely.
Number
yes, sir.
Four.
Go ahead.
Your favorite place you've seen a game and why? So not we asked you underrated, but this one's just all of the above. Your favorite place you've seen a game and why it was your favorite.
In 2009, it was December 2009, I drove down to Cameron Indoor Stadium, and Jay Williams gave us four tickets to see St. John's take on Duke. And I actually had a press pass, so I was able to give the tickets to my buddies for the road trip, which is even better. And I got to sit first row at Cameron Indoor. Fans were draped over my shoulder doing that crazy chant. It was one of the best environments in college basketball. St. John's put up a good fight. They ended up losing at the end, but most memorable game that I've covered and attended.
Oh, I cannot imagine. Are those Cameron crazies, do they earn their nickname?
They really do. I mean, not only were they sleeping outside in Krzyzewskiville, and we watched him. This was December, so it was pretty chilly down in Durham. But Coach K, for some odd reason, and he doesn't usually do this, he came out like ticked off, and he got them so riled up before the game, and it just carried through to the final buzzer. The place was like literally vibrating. It was crazy.
Oh wow, that's awesome. I won't ask you how to spell Krzyzewski, although I have a hunch that you could do so. So let's move on to our next question here with Peter. Peter Robert Casey, number five for you. The team can be a college basketball team because that's where your heart is at, or NBA, or any sport. The team with the best social media and why?
I'm going to go more on a recent one that I've been really enjoying is the Golden State Warriors. I mean, the things they're doing on Instagram, just being creative both with the photos they take and the way they layer over different information, that they give you this vantage point that you can't get from the media, something we talked about. They give you the best access. They share it in real time, so and it's always relevant to both where they're at. I mean, I think they're doing a terrific job right now. Traditionally, I would have said the Celtics. But recently, I'm really impressed by what the Warriors are doing on Instagram.
Oh, very good one. And the Golden State Warriors constantly doing cool stuff. And also big with rewarding people that do check into their games. So I imagine their venue has popped up in your radar before as well.
Yep, Oracle Arena. I know they partner with Facebook, and they do a lot of incentivizing and around that, people who check in. So the owners over there are phenomenal. Peter Guber and Joe Lacob. I mean, these are guys with – Joe specifically has a tech background. So they're really all about making the fan experience amazing. And I think when I was there actually in November, stood out to me, man. That place was rocking. You have talent now on the floor with Curry and Klay Thompson combined with this fan experience. It's great.
Oh, I love it. And spoken from someone who was doing social media and sports before there really was a lot of social media and sports. I love it. All right, here's one that there might – hopefully we don't start any arguments, but A couple of questions here. The best food item sold at a sports venue or arena, and also the most unusual. So best and most unusual food items you've seen sold at a venue.
The best, and I'm completely biased because I was born in Brooklyn, but Barclays Center has the best pizza. Spumoni Gardens, which is a famous place in Brooklyn. If you love New York pizza, which is hard not to, you can actually get it at Barclays Center without having to go too far. It is expensive. I'll preface it that way, but it's well worth the price tag in my book. Most unusual. That's something I haven't had a chance to really go crazy and try anything. So I'm gonna have to punt on that. I don't really nothing off the top of my head strikes me as crazy that I have personally tried.
Last one for you. And don't you dare say St. John's. We're not going to let you say St. John's, even though they're still alive. They have a lot of talent this year. So your pick for who's going to be cutting down the nets and winning the NCAA basketball championship in 2014?
I honestly think, and I don't like to say this, but our rivals upstate New York, Syracuse, they have a great shot cutting down the nets. I mean, ACC is very weak this year. That 2-3 zone, there's not a lot of great shooting in college basketball percentage-wise. I think it's really hard to figure out. They have the length up front with their guards. They always have athletic guards and wings that make it really hard to penetrate that zone. And they can close out so fast on shooters, so it's really tough to beat them from the perimeter. And I really, really love the point guard. He's a freshman, so that's going to be the challenge for him come tournament time. But Tyler Ennis, he's a proven winner at the high school level. And he's quickly picked up the college game. I'm going with our rivals, Syracuse.
You heard it here first. Almost 10 years to the day when another young freshman, Carmelo Anthony, led the Orange to a championship. It could be Tyler Ennis and the Orange cutting out the nets at the end of March this year. Who knows?
That's right. Hope not.
You survived your quick hitting questions. Peter, now it's time for your chance to give a shout-out, your social media all-star to follow, someone on Twitter or blog or whatever you prefer, who they are and why they're worth following.
He's not on Twitter, but his blog is a daily must-read, and I mentioned him before for the best piece of advice that I've gotten, Seth Godin. I mean, the guy knows marketing inside and out. A lot of it sounds like common sense, but he's written over 20 books. My favorite is Purple Cow, and also Tribes. If you work in the community building field online, Tribes is a must read, and his daily blog, Seth Godin, is phenomenal.
Oh, that's a very good one. Seth Godin, very well known throughout the industry, and for anyone listening too, what's great about a lot of his entries on his blog is they're very quick and easy to digest. You don't have to worry about if you're afraid of long form reads. Then you'll like Seth Godin because you get a quick piece of knowledge and a nugget that's very shareable, very usable. I love it.
Day in and day out.
Peter Robert Casey, where can we find you on social media as well as BB Passport and your current employer, Team Epiphany, as well?
Sure. For Twitter, for Team Epiphany, I'll go with them first, pay respects. It's at Team Epiphany, EPIPHANY. Myself is Peter_R_Casey. And then at BB Passport on Twitter. But if you want to log all your past games for basketball, it's bbpassport.com. You can build out your bucket list, take arena challenges, and even plan your next road trip.
I'm already thinking back in my head right now about venues I've been to, venues I want to attend as well. Well, thank you so much for your time, Peter Robert Casey of BB Passport, as well as Team Epiphany. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I know I've learned a ton, and there's just so much to talk about when it comes to the venues changing and the experience of venues changing, but also maintaining that same allure that keeps fans coming back. It was great talking to you, Peter. We appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Neil. I'm glad you share the same passion as me, man. Have a good night.
All right. Well, thanks again to Peter Robert Casey. Could have talked to him all day. Would love to have him write an itinerary for me one of these days to visit some of the best venues in the country. That'd be quite a tour. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287. I also encourage you to check out our website at dsmsports.net. to see some other content and hear all the other podcasts. And we'll be back with you in a couple weeks with another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Until then, stay warm if you're back east, and enjoy what we call winter here in the West. Take care until next time.